What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Friar Faithful Chronicle podcast. Trevor Huth here with you, joined by Deeks. And we are going to continue going over the FFC top 50 prospects. We've done 50 through 11, if you can believe that already. So we just have the top 10 guys now, the cream of the crop, the best up there. And before we dive into it, Diego, how you doing?
Good, man. I'm excited to kind of round this list out here and talk some Padres prospects with you. Before we do jump into this, though, I do want to plug something real quick. If you don't follow us on Twitter, we are kind of doing like this 64-man favorite Padre player of all time bracket. So every day we have a different region that gets voted for. It's kind of like a March Madness bracket where you guys can vote on a Twitter poll kind of thing for who your favorite Padre players of all time are. It was created by Brady Lim, who's one of our site editors, and it was all his idea. So check that out. Follow us on Twitter at the FF Chronicle. This will be going on for at least another week. On top of the stuff we've been doing from a podcast standpoint, we're also putting out positional rankings. So I think we've put out catchers, middle infielders, and corner infielders. I'm working on the outfielders right now, and then we'll obviously do the pitchers towards the end, because that's the deepest part of the system. But, you know, we kind of slowed down content-wise for a little bit here at once this whole quarantine coronavirus thing started, but we're ramping back up now, and it's going to be better than ever. So, again, you can find us on Twitter at the FF Chronicle, or find us on our website, obviously, at thefriarfaithfulchronicle.com. That's all I got, man, if you want to jump into these rankings, unless you have something to say. But this is going to be a really good show, so I'm excited.
Absolutely, and the Padres have some good guys up at the top here. I mean, they've already had some solid guys. You have Hudson Head at 12. If just to recap, one of the guys who, you know, can make a difference and is outside of this top 10 still, who would probably be inside top 10 in most organizations. So, yeah, there's nothing else really to do here except jump in, and we're just going to start. We'll release them one at a time, and we're going to talk about each guy a little bit. And so we're going to start with Ryan Weathers. Pitcher, more of a floor guy than a ceiling guy. You kind of know what you're going to get with him, but he's got a nice floor. But Diego, I'll let you jump in.
Yeah, so obviously between the two of us, you're more of the Ryan Weathers guy than I am. I think you're a little bit higher of Ryan Weathers than I am. Obviously, first round pick in 2018. I think he was the sixth or seventh overall pick in the draft. Like you mentioned, kind of a floor guy. Started out last year really well. I mean, his first start with Tin Caps was pretty electric. And then a couple starts after that, he showed well. Just went down with a mysterious injury a couple weeks into the season. And then when he came back, velocity was down. I mean, the off-speed stuff still looks pretty good. But nowadays, you're gonna struggle to have success at the big league level throwing 90, 92 miles an hour. Even if that velocity comes back, I don't really know how I feel about Weathers being anything more than a four at the major league level. I think he's a pretty safe bet to be a four or a five. Again, you mentioned more of a floor guy, so definitely a back end ceiling for him. But the mechanics aren't the greatest. He's not. I mean, he's a good athlete, but he's not like his body type isn't ideal. He's a short strider. Puts a lot of pressure on his shoulder every time he throws because his lower half really doesn't do much work. And I don't know. I want to think I'm the low guy on Ryan Weathers. I actually considered putting him around 13 and bumping Cantillo and Head up here. But he's shown well in the past, and obviously he's still super young. I don't even think he's 20 years old yet. Probably going to be in Lake Elsinore next year or whenever we have baseball for a large chunk of the season. And I think we'll probably see him at Petco at some point in 2022. I also think that he's a guy that if he comes out and has a really good start to the season, whenever the season starts, kind of a prime trade candidate, in my opinion. I think the Padres aren't as high as they once were on Ryan Weathers. But I'll kind of leave this open to you, Trev, because I know you're a big Weathers guy. So why don't you chime in here?
Yeah, I mean, he is 20 right now. So obviously the Padres took him out of high school, and to come out of high school with kind of that high floor tag is good. I mean, you know, you get guys out of high school, they're extremely raw. So plus he's got the bloodline. He's the son of former MLB pitcher David Weathers, and that is a thing that people like. But No, I think you hit the nail on the head pretty well. I don't see him as a mid rotation guy, really. I think a four or a five is where he'll sit. But as much as I like the high ceiling, low floor players, I there's certainly a lot of value to be had in guys who you can pretty confidently believe in being major league contributors, even if it is just at the back end. And the Padres are in a place where, I don't know where that came from, Diego. The Padres are in a place where they have these high ceiling pitchers. So they don't need Weathers to be that. And I think that he's going to be a fantastic piece in that rotation one day.
Yeah. I mean, if Ryan Weathers is your four or five guy headline, like in a rotation headline by Mackenzie Gore, Luis Patino, Chris Paddock, Denelson Lamet, some combination of those guys, I mean, that's fine. He's a solid guy to potentially throw 160 to 180 innings, be that lefty, be that change of pace guy. There's just not much upside there, which I think is something that both of us can agree on.
Yeah, absolutely. But like you said, if let's just say one day you have a rotation of five guys, that's Gore, Patino, Paddock, let's say Ryan Weathers, Joey Cantillo, Lamet. There's just a ton of guys there who can fill out the rotation where they don't need Weathers to be the top of the line guy. And so, I like Weathers to become that. I think that that's where his value is. And I think we've covered that. Not much more to say. So let's move on to another guy that I like more than most. And that is Owen Miller. You have him low risk, 50 ceiling, 50 realistic. And we kind of touched in a past pod about how he's probably a stopgap at second base until the next thing, comes up. But man, Miller's just hit at every level he's been at.
Yeah, he hit in high school, played for a really prestigious travel ball team up here in Wisconsin. He hit well at Illinois State. And then obviously he made it to AA in his draft year, being a third-round pick in the same draft as Ryan Weathers. So just a gamer-type guy. It's kind of the best way to describe Owen Miller. Doesn't do one particular thing great, but he does everything well. Like, he's a solid athlete, solid with the glove. He can play second base, could probably spell Machado at third, if he needs to. Kind of a versatile guy. I wouldn't be surprised if, he was capable of playing a corner outfield spot at some point in his career. The hit tool's okay. The power, it's more doubles power than over the fence power. But again, he's just okay. And, those guys are valuable. Like, Ty France has value because he's just okay at stuff he does. And Owen Miller is a guy who, after this year with Profar being a free agent and, it's Jerickson Profar, and Brian Dozier probably not going to be here next year, is a guy who could step in and be the stopgap second baseman until, C.J. Abrams is ready, or if they bring in another free agent at some point in 2021 or 2022. I don't know what their plan is long-term at second base. It's probably going to be C.J. Abrams. But I think Owen Miller is a perfect guy to step in and be a stopgap, and after that he just goes right back to the bench as a super utility guy. Maybe he plays against lefties. I don't know. But I think that Owen Miller is a valuable piece that is going to contribute to the next great run of Padres teams, per se.
Yeah, I think Owen Miller's great. He hasn't played higher than AA. It's where he spent last year. 130 games, 121 weighted runs created plus. He walked a decent clip too, 8.2%. So, I just think overall he's like you said, he's just a gamer. He knocked 13 home runs. He's never going to be a superstar power guy or I like Miller a lot to be a guy who, even if he doesn't play in AAA, they could call up, and I think that he would be fine at the major league level in terms of contributing and being an average or close to average player.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree. This guy's going to be the Padres, Ben Zobrist mold. He's just going to play everywhere. He's going to be okay. He's not going to hurt you. He's just going to be a quality baseball player. You need that.
Every team could use that. And in a super utility role, too, sure, he can do that. He's playing shortstop now. Now, if he plays second, he can also probably fill in at third. Like I said, maybe even find himself in the outfield. at some point as well. So that's pretty much Owen Miller to a T there, and another guy that I like a lot.
Yeah.
So we'll take that bat, and we can move on here to a guy that really, even though he pitched at the major league level, I don't know a ton on. So I'll let you do most of the speaking for him. But sitting at number 8 on your rankings is Michael Baez.
Yeah, so Baez came up last year. He was set back a little bit at the start of last season. He was, you know, he was sent to extended spring training, dealing with a shoulder back issue. Was sent to the Amarillo Sod Poodles at Double A, exclusively pitched out of the bullpen there, where he was disgusting. Keep in mind that the year before that, he was probably the best starter in the Midwest League with the Tin Caps. I mean, he was just absolutely demolished, like making guys look silly. It's a high 90s fastball. It's a good changeup, sound breaking ball. He's got a three-pitch mix. I don't know how well he's going to, you know, if he's on track to be a starter. I think the Padres still view him as a starter. Him and Adrian Morejon, who we'll talk about here in a little bit, are kind of in the same role where they could be impact relievers now, but the organization wants to keep on developing them as starting pitchers. The thing with Baez is he's 6'8", so he's a massive, massive human being. And if you know much about long-levered, tall baseball players, especially pitchers, they don't necessarily do a great job of repeating their mechanics, which puts strain on their body and obviously makes it hard for them to throw strikes and or consistently handle large workloads. So I think that ultimately, in the end, Baez is better suited for a back-end role. I think this is a guy who could be a really good complement to, let's say, an Andrés Muñoz and Emilio Pagan type in the back end of the 2021 bullpen if this team lets Kirby Yates walk, which I think they will do. To be honest, he could definitely be a starter, and he's talented enough, but I think that if this team is willing to compete and wants to compete now, which they do, it's just going to be a more efficient and effective plan to use him out of the bullpen. This is a guy that other teams have called on. You know, other teams have inquired on Michelle Baez to acquire him in potential deals, and they've been reluctant to do so just because they see what he can be at the big league level. And especially nowadays with, you know, the bullpen being so integral in competing for championships and such, I think that Baez is a guy who could, you know, legitimately be. I mean, if he was on any other team right now, he'd be an eighth inning setup guy, potentially even a closer for a lot of teams in Major League Baseball, and he's going to be back in Double A with the Padres because they want to develop him as a starting pitcher. So I love Michelle Baez. I think he's fairly low risk just because I just know he's going to be an effective reliever at the next level.
Well, and just taking a look at grades, right? I have FanGraphs pulled up right now. They give his fastball 60, a 60 grade, and his changeup is a current 65 with a potential to get up to 70. I mean, those are two plus, one's a plus plus pitch. And they also give him a slider curveball. Both are below average along with his command. So if you just look at that and take that, that is a reliever 100%, where you got a really nice two pitch mix to work with. And again, his size, yeah, 6'8". Out of the bullpen, I think that'd probably be where his future home is, and he would excel there.
Yeah, and, you know, some people talk about, you know, why I would rank a guy who's probably going to be a reliever this high. Well, you know, I just refer back to last year where Baseball America, when they came out with their midseason Padres list, they had Andrés Muñoz as like a top 10 prospect in the system. And I agree with that because, I mean, even if he's a reliever, the effect that Andrés Muñoz is going to have long term on this team as probably the closer is going to be a lot more than, you know, a guy like, you know, potentially a Jake Cronenworth, who we just kind of never hear about and he fizzles out, or a Jason Rosario, who could never even reach the big leagues or maybe even play above Double A. Like, there's value, especially how the game is going now, in guys that are relievers. So I like Michelle Baez a lot personally. I kind of like him more than Morejon. I know that Morejon has more upside, and we'll touch on him later, but I just know what Michelle Baez is going to be at the big league level.
And so we'll move on to another guy, and this one I might argue with you about. I think he might be a little too high, but we'll let you get your words in here first. Sitting at number seven is Gabriel Arias. He's a infielder, played with Lake Elsinore last year, and a lot of power potential. But what makes him a top 10 guy? Because I think if you look, I you're probably one of the only ones who has him in the top 10.
No, I actually think he's top 10 in most lists. Maybe you can vet that, but I know for sure he's top 10 on Pipeline's list, I believe. But, okay, so when Gabriel Arias made his professional debut, he was in the Midwest League as a 17-year-old kid coming out of Venezuela. So, again, you know, you have to expect him to struggle. 2018 was pretty bad. Again, not a strong offensive season for him. Struck out a ton. And then this past offseason, prior to the 2019 season beginning, the Padres made a lot of improvements with him. They specifically kind of designed this plate discipline program for him to kind of get put on. And they were they made a ton of adjustments to his swing. His swing was a bit long at times. It still is kind of long, but he shortened it up this past season. And we saw that, you know, He was making more contact with the ball. There is raw power, like you said. 21 doubles, 17 home runs last year in Lake Elsinore. You know, he's 20 years old. He just turned 20 years old. So if the season was going on, he would be 20 for this entire year at Double A. So again, ahead of the curve, another Padres prospect ahead of the curve. I think that Gabriel Arias is always going to be a guy who's carried by his glove. He's probably the best defender in this entire system, has an absolute rocket for an arm, is going to stick somewhere on the left side of the infield, whether it be third or short. I'm not really entirely sure. I kind of think he's better suited for third base, but if he's a shortstop, then, I mean, he's more than capable of playing there. I just think that the improvements he made are legit. Visually watching him, the difference between him in 2018 and 2019 are pretty evident. And I just think there's, you know, he's super young. He has athleticism. He's got a good body, good build. And if the bat is average with his glove, that's a quality major league player. So, yeah, I mean, there's still high risk on him attached just because, you know, he's only done it once. The California League is somewhat hitter friendly and he still strikes out quite a bit. But, you know, young. And still plenty of room to make improvements. So I like Gabriel Arias a lot, actually.
And I vetted your list. You were right. I was wrong. Seems per usual there. But, he cut down his long swing. You're right. That did help his, if you want to just look at pure strikeout percentage, because longer swings tend to have more swing and miss. He dropped that nearly 5%. The walk rate also dropped by a pretty wide margin as he went to advanced A ball. But defensively, absolutely, I agree with everything you said. I'm sure he can play anywhere. Offensively, I just wonder how much his power is going to have to carry him and if he can consistently bring that raw power he has into the game. I know he had 17 home runs. Again, hitter-friendly league, but the questions are always going to be offensively with him, I think.
Yeah.
It's not egregious or anything to have him in the top 10, obviously. I mean, Pipeline's got him there, Baseball America does. I think Fangraphs is the only one that doesn't. And they have him at 16th. But offensively, I think there's some questions. I don't know if he does reach his peak potential offensively, how much of a contributor he could be, especially with this team. I mean, where is he going to play on a future Padres roster? I mean,
yeah.
There's, as of right now, I mean, there'll be trades and stuff, but if nothing else changes and you can assume everybody progresses as they should, which is something you should never assume and you can't assume, but it just seems like there's going to be a lot of competition there, and I don't know if Arias is going to be able to win it.
So this guy is the number one trade chip, in my opinion, in this entire organization, just because he's blocked, obviously on the left side of the infield by two generational players. Second base, I think, is an option. I think you'd be doing a disservice to his arm by putting him at second base. But, I mean, the glove's going to play anywhere. I think they could play him at second base. But I think by that time that he's ready to be a second baseman and be at the big league level, you're probably better off just throwing Owen Miller or somebody out there and just waiting for Abrams to come up and or signing a guy in free agency. So there's definitely concerns of where he's going to play or like at with the Padres at the big league level, which is why I think that they're going to try and trade him. He's got to be added to the 40-man roster this offseason, or else he'll be, you know, succumb to the Rule 5 draft. So we'll have to see what he does. But if the bat keeps progressing, this kid's going to shoot up prospect lists.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he and Potts are definitely up there in terms of who you can trade away. Would have had Xavier Edwards in that grouping as well, but obviously they've already traded him away. So, I think that absolutely he's a trade candidate, and a lot of these infielders are, because you just see a bunch of guys who can fill in until the guy you're hoping is ready, and CJ Abrams. So we will move on here. A guy that you've mentioned already a bunch of times in this podcast, and that is Adrian Morjon. And very interesting here. You have his risk at very high, even though he did debut last year.
Yeah, I mean, he made his major league debut last year, was not particularly great at the big league level, did show some flashes. You know, the stuff's going to play. He throws hard. He throws a really good knuckle curve, and his changeup's really solid. But Adrian Morjon's never thrown above 60 innings at the professional level, and he's been in the professional ranks since 2017. He gets hurt every single year, and he's 6 feet tall and about 190 pounds. So, again, not a very durable frame, has dealt with shoulder impingements. He actually got shut down last year with a shoulder injury, has dealt with lower body stuff. Like, it's not a stretch to say that this guy is already injury prone given how young he is. Now, I put a 60 ceiling, 45 realistic on him, because if he stays healthy and manages to figure it out, the guy's got the stuff to be a top of the rotation guy. When he signed with the Padres in that, you know, highly coveted 2016-2017 J2 class, he was like the guy. He was the top arm. He's still incredibly young. I mean, I'm pretty sure he's like a couple days younger than Mackenzie Gore, and he's already at the big league level. But this is a guy who just can't stay healthy, man. He can't put it together. He hasn't put it together yet. And I think, you know, it's not crazy to put that very high risk on him, even though he's debuted, because it doesn't matter how good he is if he just can't stay on the field.
Yeah, and you mentioned he has the stuff, three-plus pitches. And the most interesting tidbit, I think, about him statistically is that at the MLB level, it's only 8 innings, but his ERA and his K per nine were the exact same number. And that's normally not something you might want, but it was 10.13. So K per nine wise, fantastic.
So like I talked about earlier with Baez, this is a guy who the Padres internally still view as a starting pitcher. You know, their bullpen is so good right now that they'll probably have him start out at Double A with the Sod Poodles, kind of to continue to build up that workload. I think that's a mistake. I think that, you know, you just make him a full-time reliever and kind of let him eat, because he's just going to keep getting hurt if you keep putting stress on his shoulders. And, I mean, I don't know. We'll see what they do with him. Again, a guy who I think could be a possible trade candidate, just because if he starts out well and pitches well in Double-A whenever baseball starts again, I think that, you know, some team could fall in love with the potential for him, and he could definitely be kind of a piece in an impact move for the Padres. But it just sucks, because if he could stay healthy, the finished product would be very special, and their rotation would be, I mean, absolutely incredible to even think about what that rotation would look like with Morjon, Patino, Gore, and potentially Chris Paddock being, you know, your number four starter. It's just absolutely unreal. But you know what they say about pitching prospects, that there's just no such thing as a pitching prospect, because they all get hurt.
And you know, you talked about that 2016 J2 class. Just in case people don't know, that class was headlined by Luis Robert, who's obviously one of the top guys now, and also Kevin Maitán. Yeah, was in that class as well, I believe. And so that was not great. But yeah, the Padres got Morjon.
Jorge Onya was in that class.
Onya, Gabriel Arias was in that class.
Yep.
They also signed Luis Almanzar. Jason Rosario was in that class. Jordy Barley, Ronald Bolaños was in that class.
Yep.
So, very good signing class. And him as the headline, obviously, is he's got some talent to him, especially as a lefty.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so move on to another guy. See, in this top 10, I just love this top 10 so much. Another guy that I'm higher on than most people, and that is Luis Campusano, catching prospect, future superstar. Well, I might be so overselling it, but you have him as a medium risk, a ceiling of 60, realistic 50. So why don't you jump into Campusano?
Yeah, so Campusano had a somewhat decent year at Fort Wayne in 2018. Wasn't great, but I mean, wasn't bad by any standards. The guy who was like a second or third round pick in the 2018 draft, the 2017 draft. So, just kind of a guy at the Midwest League. Came into Lake Elsinore last year, a little bit stronger. Made a ton of improvements defensively behind the plate to the point where I think he could be, just a sound, above average, potentially defensive catcher at the big league level. He's got a good arm. He's strong as hell. Strong wrists. Receives the ball well. Obviously still young, so still learning how to call his own game. But I like a lot what he does behind the plate. Offensively speaking, raw power for days. This guy looks like he's built like a Mack truck. His legs are massive. Forearms, upper body, he's real strong. And that translated to game power last year. We saw him hit the absolute piss out of the ball. Co-California League MVP last year. Really skyrocketed up lists. Probably a consensus top five catching prospect in the game. He goes out and balls out at Amarillo this year, and you got to put him right up there with the guys like Adley Rutschman and Joey Bart. I like Camposano a lot. I think he's really going to force the Padres' hand to choose between, do we really want to keep Hedges and Mejia with this guy waiting in the wing? I think that there's a legitimate chance for him to be an above-average contributor at the big league level, both offensively and defensively, sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think he's got a pretty quick swing at the plate. I'm all in on Campusano, man. I think he's going to be a solid MLB catcher. And I think he will shoot up lists. He's going to have another good year. In watching him, it seems like he's got a tendency to try to pull everything still. That's not that great, especially when you are trying to deal with outside pitchers and whatnot. But, I love the upside of Campusano, and he's probably my favorite catching prospect. I know that there's better ones in Adley and Bart, like you mentioned, and a few others, but he's my favorite catching prospect in baseball. I think Campusano's a star, and I'm not going to stop singing his praises until other people believe me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm right there with you, man. I think some people would think it's a stretch to, put him in the same conversation as Adley and Bart and, those guys up there, but I don't. I think that this guy could legitimately be, one of the best catchers in baseball in 5 years.
And you know who else is in on Campusano is Emily Walden, and that's usually a good thing. She's usually the first in on these guys. I mean, she was the first I saw in on Patino, but that's another story. We'll move on here to one of the newer Padre prospects, Taylor Trammell. He was, brought in very split reaction to it when that trade was made, I think. But, man, I love Trammell, athletic outfielder, got some speed. And I think the Padres saw what they needed to with him to be able to say, all right, here's some things we want you to work on. And the offensive numbers will improve because he was not having a good year when they traded for him, but he was still, a top 50 prospect, I think. So Taylor Trammell, what do you think?
Yeah, so I think that when Trammell was acquired, outside of having to part with Franmil Reyes, which every Padres fan of all time really likes, just because of his personality and the power potential and everything, I think that looking past that, him struggling as bad as he did with the Reds last year in AA, kind of brought in this negative connotation, negative stigma to Trammell. He kind of picked it up last year. He was electric in the Texas League playoffs with the Amarillo Sod Poodles. You know, I remember Ray Butler at Prospects 365 on Twitter posting a picture of, within a week of the Padres trading for Trammell, some adjustments they had made in his swing, bringing the hands up, kind of, you know, standing more upright and being more relaxed at the plate. The big thing for me that actually brought him up to four in on this ranking, I had Camposano ahead of him originally, and I was potentially even thinking about putting Morejon ahead of him, was what he did in spring training. I thought he looked really, really good at spring training at the plate against big leaguers. He looked comfortable, like he belonged. I liked how he looked in center field too. You know, kind of the knack with him was that he doesn't get the best reads on the ball, but again, he looked comfortable out there, man. The arm is a concern. I don't think his arm is capable of, you know, it's very comparable to a Lorenzo Cain-esque arm, but the guy moves well. He's a ridiculously good athlete, and he just looked like he belonged at the big league level, at the plate as well, putting together quality at-bats. He was arguably their best bat before getting optioned to minor league camp, and obviously this whole thing shutting down, but I'm back in on Taylor Trammell. I think that whenever we start playing baseball again, he's going to start just, you know, going back to what he used to be. And if he can find a way to put it all together, he's going to be a star because the tools are off the charts. He's incredibly toolsy. Great recognition of the strike zone at the plate. Like I mentioned, ridiculous athlete. And I'm back in on the Taylor Trammell hype.
Absolutely. You mentioned it. You know, with some of the swing changes he made, that's why I'm so bought in on Trammell. I know that, you know, he had a bad year with the Reds, and that carried over to when he first started with the Padres. But they have been making some swings. I think they've simplified his mechanics. I think his hands aren't really as loud anymore as they were pre-swing, and I think that's allowed him to start making better contact. I know before the 2019 season, I was reading that he wanted to make fixes to cut down on the swing and miss. And, whatever he did, I don't think worked, and it made him play poorly. So I'm glad that the Padres saw what they did. I'm glad they're making those changes. And I've been bought in, you know, since I started seeing that with Trammell and with the Padres. So I think that he's legit. I think that he's going to be in a future Padre outfield. And I think, you know, he's going to be a great contributor. I love that trade, and I will go down saying that I loved that trade. So absolutely, Trammell is a very solid get. And I think he just needs time and a platform to show the Padre fans that he is what he is. He did a little bit at spring training, but you know, he'll be up there, and I think that outfield with him and Trent Grisham in it would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and, you know, the addition of Tommy Pham into this kind of makes it to where the Padres don't need to rush Trammell. You know, we probably might not even see him in 2020 and potentially maybe towards the middle of 2021 just because he needs to get every day at-bats at the minor league level. Pham's going to be a free agent after 21, so, you know, if he just decides to leave, the organization that doesn't want to re-sign him, Trammell will be ready to go. They can slot him in there. And like you said, an outfield of Taylor Trammell and Trent Grisham not only is going to cover a ton of ground, but it's just going to be fun to watch on an everyday basis. So I'm excited for Taylor Trammell's future with the Padres.
Yeah, and Trammell's still probably, I mean, getting Pham allows Trammell to get the everyday at-bats at the AAA level, which I think is something that'll be very beneficial, especially considering that the Padres had, what, less than half a season to implement what they wanted with him. So I'm sure there's some other stuff that they want to work on.
Yeah.
All right, next up on the list, we have one of the most electric arms in the minors, Luis Patino. And, man, I was just watching the 2019 Futures game. This stuff is as legit as it comes. And, Patino's just a guy to be super excited about. But Diego, I mean, jump into him, man.
So the fact that Luis Patino is the number three prospect on this list should alone tell you why this system is so highly regarded. I think, you know, in 80% of the systems across the league, he would be the top prospect. This is a guy who was signed out of Colombia. you know, as a 17-year-old shortstop who had just converted to pitching. So again, the Padres signed him for like $100,000, if that. He comes into the Midwest League, absolutely just nobody knows who he is, and goes off, dominates the Midwest League. You know, struggled to start the beginning of last season at Lake Elsinore, but again, figured it out, electric there, made it up to Double-A, pitched a little bit before they shut him down. But like you mentioned, his futures game performance, who he shut down, and the gauntlet of top offensive prospects that he made look silly was incredibly impressive. You're talking about a fastball that regularly sits in the high 90s with blistering life, absolutely jumps in the zone, all types of actions to it that you just want to see out of an arm. Real feel for a power slider. That's his go-to swing and miss pitch, in my opinion. Tunnels well with his fastball. Going to miss plenty of bats using that slider at the next level. And then he'll throw in, you know, he's working on a changeup. Right now, it's maybe an average pitch, probably not, but just kind of like a, you know, where he'll just throw it here and there to kind of to get more feel for it. Again, incredibly young, still 20 years old, I believe. You know, there are some concerns with Patino. He's not the biggest guy. He's about 6 feet tall. Doesn't have much muscle to his body. He has put on weight since the Midwest League, and his body is still maturing, obviously. But I think that this kid could be, you know, one of the top pitching prospects, if not the top pitching prospect in baseball, at some point, you know, in the 2021 season. I don't think we see him this year. I think even before the season got canceled or postponed, I didn't think we were going to see him this year just because still super young and still needs to work on some stuff. But, I mean, just thinking about a rotation led by Mackenzie Gore and Luis Patino, as a Padres fan and as a fan of a team that hasn't had a go-to arm since 2006, really gets me going. So I love Luis Patino.
And there's a lot to love. I mean, you mentioned that fastball slider, and he's working on the changeup. The changeup's already fantastic. I mean, it's an above-average pitch. And one of my favorite things about Patino, and this is just being a baseball fan, is he and Mackenzie Gore are like best friends. And that's documented. I think that's awesome because they could be at the top of this Padre rotation just dominating. You know, it's just it's so amazing to watch. He's just so much fun to watch pitch. I mean, there's little else to say about him with that, you know, blazing fastball, the killer slider. I mean, electric is the only word I ever use to describe him, it seems like, but that's the best word too.
It's the only word too, actually, to be honest with you. Because I mean, everything about the guy, from his personality to the stuff to everything about him, is just absolutely electric. So
yeah, he's fantastic. The really good get by the Brewers. So now,
why'd you say Brewers? Second time you've said Brewers this podcast.
Oh my God!
What do you got going on with the Brewers? What's
I don't know why.
You big Bryce Turang guy now? You just can't stop thinking about the Brewers.
I am a big Bryce Turang guy. I was talking earlier today with one of my coworkers about the Brewers. I think it's just still in my head. This is the Padres, though. Did you know that?
Apparently, this is a Brewers podcast now. We are the new Friar Faithful Chronicle Brewers Pod. Thanks for joining. the Brewers pod system, farm system is terrible. Bryce Turang.
Not anymore. Apparently they have Patino and
yeah, I mean, apparently they now have the best farm system in baseball, according to you. But I just want to rebrand completely. We are now a Brewers podcast. Thank you very much. And Manny Machado did nothing wrong. All right, CJ Abrams, let's go.
All right, we are going to start over top 10. Padres. I almost did it again. My God. All right, Padres. we're God. Number two, the first overall pick from this last draft, CJ Abrams. He's a guy that is at the top of most dynasty first year player draft rankings. If you're playing fantasy baseball, cause he can bring a lot to the plate, but the Brewers, oh my God.
You did it again, dude. What the fuck is wrong with you? That's like the seventh time.
Oh God. Now you've confused me. All right, we're going to start CJ Abrams over. Can we do that? Can you take this part out?
No, I can't. We're rolling with it. Let's go. CJ Abrams. All right, why do I like CJ Abrams? Why did I put him above Luis Patino? This is what it is to me, man, okay? I'm not even thinking about the debut. Throw the debut out the window. I don't care how that he hit like 700 in the Arizona Rookie League against guys that we'll never hear of. The swing is really good. And the bat-to-ball skills for a 19-year-old, he doesn't swing and miss a ton. And when you're as fast as he is, a true 80-grade runner, going to be one of the fastest players in baseball one day, I think that all you need to do is just make steady line drive contact, right? But on top of that, so on top of his ability to already not swing and miss a lot and to just consistently put the ball in play, I think that he's going to hit for some power. He's 6'2", 180. I think if he just grows a little bit more again, a kid who's 19, he was a high school senior at this point last year, continues to grow into his body, learn how to use his frame, fill out those levers. This is a guy who I think can hit 15 to 20 home runs on an annual basis during his prime. I don't think that's crazy to think about. People comp him to D. Gordon, which I think is asinine because, I mean, D. Gordon has no power whatsoever, and I mean, Abrams does in that regard. A guy who's going to steal 30-plus bags easily at the big league level next year, or not next year. You got me all screwed up, dude, at the big league level when he gets there. But sound hit tool, some power to come, stolen base potential, defensively, ridiculously good athlete. He'll probably end up moving to center field at some point, if not second base. But again, I mean, a Byron Buxton type of athlete here with C.J. Abrams. This is going to be kind of a hot take here, man. I know Mackenzie Gore is going to be really good, but I think there was a second in my mind where I thought about putting Abrams number one. And I think that there's real potential for someday, you know, in 2022, when 2022 rolls along, for this guy to be the number one prospect in baseball because people love tools. I mean, Jerickson Profar was the number one prospect in baseball at one point because of his tools. And Abrams has it completely, man. He's refined for a 19-year-old. I don't think he's going to struggle at the Midwest League. I think he's going to be perfectly fine adjusting to full season ball, even though most 19-year-old kids don't. But I love C.J. Abrams. This was a great pick by the Padres. I was kind of upset when they took him. I wanted Nick Lodolo. I wanted that college arm that was, you know, closer to being ready to reach the big leagues. But I mean, C.J. Abrams is now like my favorite prospect in this system.
You know, if you're trying to create excitement, using names like Byron Buxton and Jerickson Profar probably aren't the best way to do that.
Well, you know what they were prospect-wise. I mean, Byron Buxton was like a 70-grade prospect according to MLB Pipeline in like 2012.
I mean, you might as well just complete the trend. Say he's like Lewis Brinson, too. I mean, right, why not, right?
All right. Let's talk about the Brewers some more.
Yeah, he's on the Marlins, so whatever. but no, you're absolutely right. Abrams, I like him as a prospect a lot. I'm not quite as high as you are, but I'm not sure anybody is after hearing you talk about him. I think that he does have a really good hit tool. I think it's got a lot of room for improvement. He definitely has power. I think that's where the D. Gordon comp absolutely falls apart because there's a lot of raw power, I think, with Abrams. It's just a matter of can he translate to the game. And at a certain point, it's just going to be finding a defensive home and letting him work. He's got all the talent in the world. And, I think you're right. He'll shoot up these lists. He'll be a mainstay at the top of lists until he does debut. I mean, that's about it. It's just a matter of how those tools develop and finding out if you're going to put him in center, if you want him to play second. Again, it's really hard to think of him. It's hard to have anybody on the other side of the infield at third and short right now because of the generational talent filling up that side. So I think finding a defensive home for him and letting him work is going to be key. And hopefully that power comes around because he can be a legit player in his prime, absolutely, for the San Diego Padres.
And not the
most embarrassing
Brewers.
Thing that's ever happened. Not I can't believe Milwaukee we're leaving Brewers. It in the podcast.
I just want to say, not the Milwaukee Brewers.
It's the San Diego Padres. I don't know where you're getting this Brewers stuff from. You're going crazy. Again, the most embarrassing thing that ever happened to me personally. I'm glad we're all here to witness it. Thank you for listening, and feel free to laugh at me as much as you'd like. So we're going to move on now to the number one, the top dog. And that's Mackenzie Gore. Surprising nobody that he's up there. I think C.J. Abrams would have been a surprise up there, but it is Gore. You give him a 70 ceiling, 60 realistic, low risk. Mackenzie Gore, stud. not much else to say, although you're probably going to say a ton more. So go ahead, Mackenzie Gore.
All right. No, I'm going to keep it pretty simple here. Mackenzie Gore is the best pitching prospect in baseball. With that being said, Mackenzie Gore is still a pitching prospect, which is the only reason why I did not give him an 80 grade ceiling, just because there was always room for pitching prospects to get injured. This is me physically knocking on wood so that Mackenzie Gore never has to deal with that, because, I mean, if this guy stays healthy and hits his ceiling, you're talking about, you know, a potential Clayton Kershaw type of arm, potential to be the best left-handed pitcher in baseball in the next 3 to 5 years, a guy who can legitimately anchor a rotation and carry a rotation through the playoffs, and could legitimately contend for Cy Youngs on a yearly basis. He's unbelievable. It is 4 at least above average pitches with potential for all 4 to be plus. He has dominated every level of the minor leagues, even in his first year in full season ball when he wasn't healthy, when he was on the field with the blisters, still flashed dominance last year. Unbelievable. Don't think we see him right away in 2020, even before, you know, this season started. You know, last year the Padres broke camp with Chris Paddock. I think Chris Paddock was kind of further along where Mackenzie Gore is. One thing I want to see Gore do is throw all 4 pitches in one game. He hasn't needed to do that because he's just been so dominant. But once you get to the big leagues, being able to effectively mix stuff does play. And I think about Mackenzie Gore probably 5 to 7 times on a daily basis. So that's all I have. He's going to be amazing. And yeah, it was a great pick at number 3 overall back in 2017.
Well, and it's not just that he has the 4 above average to plus pitches. He can control them too. I mean, he's just flat out one of the most impressive prospects you've seen. And I mean, it's hard to think this, but getting him 3rd overall, it was a deal.
Yeah, I was actually really
terrified. A value pick in the draft, if you will.
I was really, really scared that Minnesota was going to take Hunter Green number 1, and then Gore would go to 2, and then we would get Royce Lewis, which, you know, given, I mean, Royce Lewis is a good prospect. He's going to be a quality major leaguer, but I mean, Mackenzie Gore's, you know, even Mackenzie Gore's floor is that of like a number 3 starter on a champion. I mean, he's Patrick Corbin at floor with better stuff, so. Yeah. I mean, absolute steal. You're completely right.
And just a joy to watch. Again, another guy I saw in that Futures game. Just so much fun to watch. Again, you like that he's good friends with Patino. I mean, that's all I got. There's not much else to say other than to get excited for this group of 10 guys to play for the Padres. I'm sure that they're going to be fun once they get there. And you know, Diego, you got anything else to plug besides the favorite Padre?
No, man. Make sure you follow Trevor on Twitter at, what is it, at Hooth Trevor, I think is your Twitter handle.
That is it, yeah.
You can find me at the new at, which is now at Deegs Baseball. A lot of good stuff coming here, man. You know, none of us know when baseball is going to start back up, but that doesn't mean that we can't keep putting out content. It'll probably mostly be minor league related, just because, you know, there's not much. We can always talk about prospects and such, but, you know, not much stuff going on the major league side. But thank you, Trevor, for coming on and doing this stuff. Obviously, podcasting with you and listening to you talk about the Milwaukee Brewers on the San Diego Padres podcast is always intriguing. And
Detroit Tigers.
Yeah, not the Detroit Tigers. I don't want to talk about whoever is currently playing for the Tigers. Yeah, thank you for listening as always, and we'll catch you guys on the other side.